They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. On this episode, I sat down with Scott Brooks, the head coach of the Washington Wizards. We sat down on the concourse in Las Vegas last month at the NBA Summer League, and we had an honest conversation about what happened last season with the Wizards, what the injury to John Wall means to the team, the change in leadership and what that means to Scott Brooks, and a few other stories that Scott and I like to go back and forth about. So terrific episode. Scott is a great guest, a great coach as well, so I enjoyed talking to him about that. Quick housekeeping note, though, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it, head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. All right, on to my conversation with Scott Brooks. All right, joining me now on the podcast, he is most definitely one of the top 30 coaches in the NBA today. Making his annual appearance here at the NBA Summer League after he swore the last 2 years to never appear again. Scott Brooks, head coach, Washington Wizards.
Chris, this is my last time ever doing this again.
Say that every year.
Only time I would do it if I'm ever the 31st coach. When I have nothing to do, I want to just hang with you.
At that point, you'll be in the media. You'll be
exactly right.
Like pontificating on ESPN or Fox. Yes. Would you ever do that? Did you? Because you took in your year off between Oklahoma and Washington, you just kind of did what like Frank Vogel did and some other coaches did.
Yeah, no, I never did anything with the media. Never did TV. Never, but I just wanted to get better. I wanted to go to. I went to like 4 training camps. Went to San Antonio. Spent like 3 or 4 days with Pop and their group. And what an amazing opportunity and experience that he gave me. I mean, he just basically gave me everything and come to our meetings. I'm listening to Pop's meetings and this and that. I'm like, shit, I wish I would have had this knowledge. We wouldn't have got our butts kicked by him many times. But and then I went to Spain and hung out with Sergio, the Spanish national coach, for 2 weeks. And it was just a great time, but I never did media.
Do you learn something like tangible in those visits in that time, stuff that you evolve as a head coach?
Yeah, I think a couple of things you do. You learn things like what you're doing, and you see one of the greatest coach of all sport doing some of those things. I'm not saying he's doing everything I do, but a lot of the same things that we were doing. And I'm like, okay, it kind of gives you a little bit of reassurance. And then you pick up things. And the way he did it, he gave me carte blanche. I hung out. I played pickup games with Becky and their staff, and I got my butt kicked. I had to wear Spurs gear while I was doing that. So it was actually, it was fun. I mean, I loved it. Went out to dinner with Chip England and Boban and spent 2 hours laughing at his funny personality. But I tell you what, I look at that year. I don't like my agent Warren, who is the agent of every coach in the world, kind of changed my perspective. I didn't get fired. I had a year to get better, and I had a sabbatical, like he likes to call it. But that year helped me out a lot. Mm.
Could you ever do media? Could you see yourself like on a set analyzing, reacting to deals and things like that? Let me answer first for you. I think you could, because as a player, I mean, let's be honest, you were a huge dick back then. Like you I mean, you were a jerk, and I think you could be that kind of if the restraints were taken off you. If the restraints were taken off you.
I don't even know why I even hang out with you. Matter of fact, you're one of the worst friends I've ever been around. I'm gonna change my number just because you have it.
Were you not a jerk at times as a player?
I was. I was aggressive. I was feisty. I had to be. I had no talent. I barely can shoot. I pass it to the other team more than my teammates. So I had to fight for every inch and every – yeah, I was a dick at times for some coaches. But you know what? It kept me in the league for over a decade.
It did. But, like, that attitude, I think, would work well on TV.
Yeah, maybe. You
know, it's kind of worked for Stan Van Gundy.
I don't know. I mean, he takes it to another level.
He does. He does.
He has that feistiness about him. I mean, he can – he's plus he's funny. He can get away with it.
Yeah. I think if you're going to do that, you have to be like, I'm not going to be a head coach. You have to be done with it.
Yeah, you have to be able to – yeah, because you got to lie a lot, right?
Yeah, it's – well, yeah, in certain
because
situations.
Because you want to say things, and okay,
yes.
If I say that, I might never be able to coach for that team ever. But no, I don't. One, I don't think I would ever do it, just because I don't think I could be good at it. Not that I'm good at coaching, but I feel like I have a better chance to be a better coach than what you do.
Yeah.
You're talented,
I think
Chris. You're really good at what you do, and I'm really impressed. That's why you have 17 jobs, man. You just every time I look around, you're doing something. You're working for somebody.
This is the lie, right? This is like you're so good. This
okay,
is the lie
good.
Part. we're doing the lie part. So a completely different set of circumstances than last time when we sat here. Like last year, you're coming into a second year there. You're a second round playoff team. You're trying to build on that. And then things kind of unravel largely because of the injury to John Wall. You still fight your way into the playoffs. Satoransky was great for you when John went down. But how would you describe last season for you in total, everything that team went through?
Well, you know, a couple of things I look back at the last couple of months. First thing, you look back and that I didn't do a good job. I could have done things different. And then I thought we've had some unfortunate luck with the injuries. And that's the part you hate, but you don't prepare for it. You can never prepare for John missing, you know, 2 years ago, 40 games. Last season, 50 games. This season, who knows if he even plays. He's working his butt off to get back. But I wasn't expecting all that. I figured, okay, we had our bad injury year. But last year it was just from the start, it was tough. And John was a big part of our team. You know, we were really good in a lot when John's healthy. The bright side of it, Brad really stepped up and took his game on the court and in the locker room to another level. And going forward, he's going to be has to do that with all the group of young players that we have. But also with all that being said, we never made excuses. Not one time I did, not one time any of our players made excuses that, you know what, we just, you know, woe is me. We had a lot of injuries. And, you know, if we didn't have injuries, we would be competing against the best teams in the East.
You said Brad took his game to another level. We all saw that and how it played out on the floor. But what did you see from him when in the aftermath of that John injury?
You know, one, he's a big winner. Man, that guy, he competes and he wants to do things properly. He wants to. He puts in his time before and after practice. It gives you great effort at practice, and if you just keep piling up those type of work habits, you're going to have success if you have the talent, the skill set like he does. And there's no secret to it. I mean, some of these players, I've been on teammates that they think it's easy. They think you just take this vitamin at night and you're going to be a good player. You got to work every day, and you can't have off days. And Brad is like that, and he's taking his game. I mean, he can make the thing that when I got the job 3 years ago, I know he can shoot, but he can score every area of the floor, attack the basket, free throws, 3-point. And now I think the last year and a half, he was able to facilitate and make his teammates better. This year, I think there's no limit. I think he can average 8 or 9 assists a game. I think those are numbers that are attainable, and I think he's ready for that challenge.
And then we don't talk anymore about his injury history either. I mean, it's gotten, like, right before he took the job, that was a significant concern. Like, would his legs be able to hold up? It doesn't even seem to be a variable with him anymore.
You know, that's what, when I took the job, you know, you hear all the rumblings, you know, Brad's not tough enough. He's had injuries, he plays, you know, you're going to have him for 50 to 60 games. But, you know, John and Brad don't get along. Those two things that you hear about all the time. One of the things that I saw with Brad from the day one, he practices every day. And he basically played every game for the last 3 years. I think he missed 2 games my first year. And then he wants to play. I mean, we were going nowhere at the end of the season pretty fast. And I'm like, Brad, you know what? I appreciate everything you've given me the last couple of years. And this year, we're not making the playoffs. We're out. You want to, like, chill out for, you know, the last couple of weeks and rest and maybe play a game here. He says, Coach, you know what? I signed up to be the leader of this team and do it every night. And he wanted to do that, and he wanted to play every game, and that's why he played for 2 years in a row, all 82.
All right, let's talk about Rothy's for a minute here, a great new sponsor of the Crossover podcast. Rothy's are the everyday flats for life on the go. They're stylish, comfortable, and go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. They've quickly become a most loved, gotta-have-them brand thanks to their wide range of colors and patterns, with new ones launching constantly, and their zero break-in period. Since Rothy's are crafted using 3D knitting techniques and hand assembly, their seamless design means right out of the box comfort. Best of all, they're made from recycled plastic water bottles. That's right, over 25 million water bottles have been diverted from landfills to make these gorgeous and sustainable shoes. Another major bonus, they're fully machine washable, so your pair will be fresh and ready every laundry day. Plus, Rothy's always comes with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. There's no risk and no reason not to try. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/cadence. Comfort, style, and sustainability, these are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com, that's rothys.com/cadence today. When the season ends, obviously there have been changes in the front office with Ernie being let go there. What are you thinking at that point? Because, I mean, that certainly is a state of flux. Do you wonder about your future, and how did that all play out?
Well, I've been in the league for nearly 30 years or 30 years or so, but I do know when there's a change, a lot of times it's not just one change. I was honored when I met with Ted early on after the season, and he wanted me to be his coach, and I take pride in that. And so I knew that I was going to be back. With that being said, I didn't know that everything else was going to, you know, be, all of our other staff members were going to be back. And Tommy Shepard has did a phenomenal job. He was in a position that people look at it, you're in a tough position. He's not in a tough position. He's in a great position. You work your entire life to be in that position. I worked my entire basketball life to be a head coach, and I didn't want PJ to get fired. And he got fired, and guy got an opportunity. Tommy, myself, nobody wanted Ernie, you know, to lose his job. Nobody wants that. But Tommy stepped up, and he never worried about his job. He worried about what's the best for the organization moving forward. We cleaned our team up. We got a bunch of young guys that are hungry, that want to compete, that I can't wait to work with and to try to get them better month by month and see how far we can go come season end.
And people like to, you know, naturally attach Tommy to Ernie and say like they're the same type. But Tommy's his own man, and he has his own ideas for how to build a team. But you mentioned the young guys. Who are you most excited about as you try to turn the corner? Because you're going to have to get more out of them to become a playoff team again.
Absolutely. We're going to have to, collectively as a group, we're going to have to get a lot out of everybody. And Brad is obviously the focal point going forward. We signed Ish Smith. I coached him in Oklahoma. I call him sometimes, he gets mad. I call him Disneyland. He's like the happiest person on planet. It's like every single day, he's never have a bad day. I almost like try to make him have a bad day, and he just refuses to accept it. And then IT, you know well, and all the Celtic fans know him well, and they're obviously love what he's done, and I have a lot of respect for what he's done. Drafted 30th and fought his way to make it and made some, you know, some trades along the way, and probably a lot of those teams regret it. And then he's had the injury, and I'm taking pride of it. I spent time with him the last 2 days and here in Las Vegas. I'm taking pride in his journey back to where he needs to be. And you know, he has a long way to go, but I can't wait to work with him day by day. Rui, our draft choice, I can coach for the next 40 years. I don't know if I'm going to have a player that's going to be as polite and respectful and humble as Rui. And I had a lot of great guys like that, but he's right there with the top of them. And he has a fan base that is so excited about his future, and I can't wait to be a part of that as well.
I want to ask you about Isaiah, because he is convinced that he can get it back. Like, mentally, he is convinced he can get it. When I talk to people in Boston about what he lost in getting that back, is that they often say that when he was at his best, he was indefatigable. Like, he would just run and run and run and get open and make plays. They don't know if he can still do that. I don't know if you can even look at what he did last year in Denver, because that was a really tough situation to walk in on a team that was already set at their guard spot, but what have you seen out of him health-wise, and what do you think he still can be at this point of his career coming off the injuries?
You know, a couple of things I look at when I even watched him last year, that's a tough situation. You know, he got healthy towards the end of the season, but they were rolling. They were like the number one ranked team or seeded team in the West. And I watched their games, and I knew, you know, we were going to be looking for a point guard, and that guy showed so much leadership during games. He was like an assistant coach. He was up, standing up, directing traffic, coming on the court during timeouts and talking to the guys that are playing in front of him. And to me, that's a sign of a winner. And that's not easy to do. I've been in that position for my entire career. And there was times I didn't want to cheer for my teammates. But, you know, you have to. You got to do what's right. And I saw that in him. Will he get it back? I'm not going to be a hater and say he'd never get it back. That's not my wiring, and that's not his wiring. He didn't get to the NBA thinking that he can't do it. My mom taught me a long time ago, can't is not a word. I mean, she made me write it in a piece of paper, line by, I think there was like, 26 lines in a normal piece of paper, front and back, 10 of them. I can't is not a word. I can't is not a word. And I think he believes that as well. I don't know how good he's going to be, but I can't wait to see it and work with him every day.
Mm-hmm. When you, I mean, you had a firsthand look at the best of him in the postseason.
Yeah, thanks for the memory. He had 53.
You know, I'd like to remind you of all the good
memories. I told him, I said, you know, you feel good about scoring 53. I don't see why. You didn't get John Havlicek's all-time playoff record. He had 54. Yes, I don't even know if that's a fact, but I think it's something okay. like that. And he just looked at me. He sometimes you just pull things out. The players don't fact check, you know. You could just say anything now.
That's good. That's useful.
But, right? Mm. So all my former players and current players, I lie my butt off.
But, I mean, seeing him play that way, what, you know, that was sort of what I had heard from the Boston side. But what made him special then? Like, what made him so good when he was at the peak of his powers, when you were going up against him?
I always look at him and I see toughness. He is tough as nails. And the thing that, this, even before the toughness, I see he's a winner. I've seen him in Sacramento, and I remember this firsthand. We're up like 20. Oklahoma, we were rolling. We were beating a lot of teams that year. And we're at home, and he's with Sacramento, and they were struggling. He came in and almost won the game because he has no quit in him. Yeah. And so I saw from – I always like watching point guards because I played the position. I like to see how players respond in tough situations. And you can go into a game and just say, you know what, this game is over. I'm just going to jack up, take bad shots because it's about me. I'm going to get my stats up for my next team. But coaches don't look for that. They want to see guys playing the right way through the last minute of the game. And his toughness is just – I marvel at it. I mean, what he is able to do, he gets knocked on his butt a lot, and he gets back up. Mm-hmm. And he has a little swagger to him. He'll talk back to you and he'll talk some trash to you. I like guys that compete. You can always, you know, slow guys down. But when you have a guy that has a high motor of competition, competitive spirit, it helps the rest of your team. And he will be a big part of our team.
Are you curious to see if he has that fearlessness still, you know, after the injury? Because you're right, that was one of the characteristics that defined him.
Yeah, I don't think you ever lose that. He's not afraid to hit or take the last shot. And, you know, if you're really good, you're going to make in the mid-40s. Mm-hmm. So you're going to miss 55 or, you know, maybe even 60% of them. Mm-hmm. And the guys that are like IT, Isaiah, he has that in him. He has that it factor that you look at, man, that guy – You don't want him late in the game. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get him back to that. Him and Ish are going to get a great opportunity to really lead our team. Whether it's whoever starts or whoever doesn't start, they both are going to get great opportunities.
Is it a training camp battle for who starts? I mean, how do you see it that playing out?
I think it's just as you go through every, you want to have it open. Mm-hmm. And it's open, but you're not going to – a lot of times when it's open, you don't decide on, okay, this guy beat him out. What's best for the team? And – that usually presents itself. And a lot of times I've been around players that, you know, like James Harden. He said, "Coach, it's best for the team for me to come off the bench." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Gosh, dang, are you serious?" But he played still like top five in off guard minutes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times that will work itself out. So I'm not even like. And both of them want to just play and compete and help us win.
It's funny. I mean, James Harden was pretty comfortable coming off the bench playing for you, wasn't he?
He was comfortable. We had, you know, Topple missed, 6 weeks. We knew he was going to have an injury. He was going to miss a bunch of time. And we decided to start James. And, you know, he didn't want to. He came back to me the next day. "Coach, I want to be back with my guy, Nick." He loved playing with Nick Collison. He loved playing with Eric Maynard, Daquan Cook, and Naz Muhammad. But I sold it to him. "You're going to be the guy for 8 minutes in each half." Because Kevin and Russell, even though they would basically tell me I'm good, I want to play all 48 minutes, you know, I gave him a 10-minute rest. I'm no dummy. We didn't have load management back then. The players that want to win, they don't care. Mm. They just want to compete.
Was it tough for you on the side to see Kevin go down with that type of injury, the most significant of his career?
Yeah, I mean, those are the injuries. I mean, it happens. Injuries happen part of the game, like I said earlier. But those major injuries like that, where you're going to miss, you know, a big chunk of the next season, if not all, those are the ones. And I know, I mean, Kevin's going to be fine. I know him, love coaching him. The thing that I worry about, he is such a hooper. He wants to be on the court, in the mix. I worry about between the ears. How is he going to be able to handle not being in the battlefield? But, you know, their staff, you know, Kenny and Sean Marks and one of my former coaches, Adam Harrington, they're going to keep him involved. They're going to keep him engaged. But that's like we're doing the same thing with John Wall. These guys are warriors, man. They want to play. They want to compete. They want to be able to be on the court. They want to feel the losses. They want to feel the victories. They want to get to practice sore the next day, and they're not going to be able to do that. So John, and you know, we're finding ways of how we're going to be able to help him go through this tough period.
Yeah, you have to, right? I mean, Boston did that with Gordon Hayward in his kind of gap year there. You got to keep them sort of mentally into the mix there.
It's the hardest thing, because no matter what you do, they always come back, "Man, I want to be on the court. This is not good. This is what I do," and they're taken away. It's nothing like it. When you retire, you know, okay, I'm moving on. I'm taking my kids to school every morning. I'm going to coach Little League and do all that. But you don't get that anymore. Once you're hurt, I mean, it's done, and you know you're coming back.
So hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Mannix. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mannix. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Mannix, M-A-N-N-I-X. ZipRecruiter.com/Mannix. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Did you feel anything when Russell got traded? Did you feel anything about it kind of closed the chapter? Like that was kind of the end of what you guys sort of started. I mean, what was it, 09, 08? Like in the very beginning, and you know, 10 years later, like should be like a 30 for 30 on that team and could have been.
There's a lot of changes, you know, a lot of changes that took place. I don't even know Steven Adams, I coached, and Andre, I think it was his rookie year. That's the NBA, man. You go to bed at night and you don't even want to, like, especially in Vegas. You're up all night anyway, so you're always, you know, looking on the
what are you talking about? I go to bed at 7:30 every night.
Yeah, out a.m.
No, I get a full 12 is what I try to do. Exactly, full 12, right? That's my motto.
It's, I mean, the game, it's changed. I mean, I always tell players, you know, you are the best of the best of the best, and you get paid very handsomely. But anytime you see a former player, you should be thanking them with the biggest hug, because they gave you opportunity to make this type of money and to have this free agency. You get to basically pick wherever you ever want to play, and that wasn't always the case for many years ago. And I try to, you know, tell them the history of the game, and I'm for players. And I love players getting an opportunity because it's short. I mean, it is short. You can be cut like I've been cut, and you can be traded like I've been traded, and you can end your career when you're still healthy and you don't want anybody, you don't want to end your career, but it happens, and you got to enjoy the moments so that you're able to play. And but it happens fast, and like Oklahoma, it's there. I think they're starting their 12th season now in existence after being from, you know, Seattle for many years.
Will you always wonder what could have been at some point if things had gone a different way?
Absolutely. I mean, you can always play the what if, and it's always, you always, when you do that, the hypotheticals, the what if games, you always play it to your favor.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I say we would have won 5 championships, but it's easy for all of us to say that. It was tough decisions that had to been made, and they were made, and unfortunately they did happen. And, you know, but it's been almost going on 5 years. But it seems like forever ago I was living in Oklahoma City. But I have a lot of respect for their ownership group. I have a lot of respect. You know, I have a lot of respect for Sam. He's in tough positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all part of it. At the time when I was fired, I wasn't feeling the sympathy of, you know, but I understand that, you know, we all have to make tough decisions. I've made them as coaches, and I made them with my decisions too. But I'm fortunate to be on an NBA roster, and I love being the coach of our team, and I'm excited about the future that we have.
So the future that you do have, at least in the short term, is there any kind of – do you have discussions about what you're going to try to do? In other words, like, is it – we're going to try to make the playoffs? Like, are we're going to try to contend? Because you're sort of – with John's injury, you're kind of in that weird place right now. What's the discussions about what kind of team you want to be next season?
Yeah, I mean – John's injury is tough. It's more tough for him. I mean, I'm going to be all right. Our team's going to be all right, but it's tough on him. And I want him to get back. I want him to come back better mentally. He's going to come back better because he's going to be around the game, and I'm going to treat him like as a coach early on. He's going to do some planning and some drills and some personnel, and I think that's going to be good for him. He could see the game, you know, differently. We all do, and you know, I'm going to be able to learn from him. But he's going to come back physically. The tough part is you can look at it that way as a team. It's going to be tough, but I look at it as it's going to be a challenge. It's definitely going to be a challenge to make the playoffs. Is going to be a big, tough challenge. But we don't know what's going. We don't know. We're not going to say we're not going to make the playoffs. We're not going to say we're going to make the playoffs. What we're going to do is we're going to come to work month by month, and we're going to put in great effort, and we're going to put our best foot forward and have those days pile up. It's like we got like 9 guys under 22. Mm-hmm. That's changed overnight. Tommy has changed the program overnight, and it's basically Wizard U. Mm-hmm. And we have to have that mentality and be creative and find ways to improve our group faster than the natural progression of day by day age. But it's a challenge for me, it's a challenge for my staff, and it's going to be a partnership with everybody involved, and we all have to be on the same page of really understanding the challenges and moving forward.
It feels like, and I don't know if you feel the same way, it feels like things have changed in the NBA a little bit, in the sense that once, if you were like a 8th seed or a 7th seed, it would be an invitation to tear the whole thing down. Now you saw what Brooklyn did. You saw what the Clippers did. I mean, they succeeded. They built a culture, and that became appealing down the line to other players. So you have your stars kind of locked in now. But is that – do you feel that in the NBA, that maybe just ripping things apart is not necessarily the way to go anymore?
Yeah, I mean, you want to have a good culture. You want your program to be clicking on all cylinders. You want to be able to attract players, and you want to be in a position where you can do that. But let's face it, money talks. Money talks. Everybody wants a good contract. Whether you are the backup point guard or the 13th man, you want more than the minimum. It's always been that way. You know, I was nicknamed the minimum for a long time. They knew.
Wait, is that on your basketball reference page?
You know,
if it's not, I'm putting it on.
I'm going
there.
On Wikipedia tonight and putting that. One of my nicknames was the minimum. Because I knew, but you know
Please
what?
Please tell me nobody else knows that story, because I want this to be the first time.
That's the first time ever been told.
The minimum.
And only if, only, they would joke around it. And I actually nicknamed myself that many years ago, because all my teammates were getting big money. But you know what? I never complained about it, because my minimum, I was in a position, there was only 275 players, 23 teams. And back then, there was only like 12 players. We didn't have two-way players. We didn't have a G League. We didn't have three guys that were not going to suit up. You, if you were on the team, you were suiting up. And I used to always, like, you know, really the nickname came from my buddies teasing me. But I always say, you know what, I'm the minimum, but you would never play in the NBA, buddy. You would never play in the NBA. And don't blame it on anybody but yourself. You didn't spend the hours and hundreds of hours a week shooting on your shooting in your driveway or at the park. But I didn't mind that nickname, because I was one of 275.
This is what Scalabrine says to me a lot, like when guys kind of like
guys
off the street.
Scalabrine sucks, by the way. Okay. I was so much better of a role player than he ever was.
Save that one. But like guys come up to him, like in Boston, like, I could bust you up, like I, and like sometimes he will take them on the court and he does it. He busts them up. Like you. Like, there's a difference with being a back-end bench NBA player is still infinitely better than anybody else that's out there on the floor.
You know, with Brian, that's so true. That guy is one of the best players that ever play the game. I don't even know how many former NBA players in the history of the game, 70-something years, right? And you put him in a summer gym anywhere in America, and he will bust people's behind left and right, and people were going to say, man, I used to always think that guy couldn't play. He never played. He came in, you know, late in the games, or, you know, later in his career, didn't play much at all. The same thing they said about me. But you go into a pickup game and summer leagues, man, I was all MVP in summer leagues. I just couldn't play in October. I was a beast in July. The Loyola Marymount Summer League, when they had me, they tricked me. I had to pay like the $375 entry fee, and they put me on the free agent team, and they told us there's going to be scouts all over, and there's going to be teams all over the world watching us, and only buddy in the stands at Loyola Marymount at 8 a.m. watching us play is girlfriends and parents, and that was it. There was nobody else, but they tricked. They got my money, and I was a three-man on my first summer league team.
Six
I was
foot,
the three.
Right there.
Thank you for saying 6 foot.
Six
it's really
foot. We'll 5'11". Give you 6 foot. There you go.
That's a true story.
That's amazing. I've heard that from you before. Like, that's amazing that you had to pay to get into summer league.
We had to pay. And thank goodness I was smart enough to stay there every day, all day. I watched so many NBA practices from 8 to 12. And I was like a tackling dummy. Oh, we need an extra body. Hey, that guy looks like he wants to play. Hey, come down here. I know you got a sack lunch. Come on down. Put the lunch down. And I did drills for like, you know, probably four or five different teams that summer. And then I finally got an opportunity. I played in the Summer League All-Star Game. Played against the Russian national team, and they were playing with the Atlanta Hawks. They were like a combo team. And I got the next day, I played after that game, and Jimmy Lynam called and said, hey, we want you to come to Philadelphia.
If you went to like a pickup court down the street, how would you perform right now?
I play pickup games as much as I can with my son and all of his buddies.
You're not scared of, there are coaches out there scared of injury. Like, remember
no.
when Nate McMillan kind
Oh
of,
yeah, no, see, you don't talk about injuries. And you did like basketball, former basketball 101. You don't talk about injuries, Chris. You should know better. Oh, yeah, no, you're not an athlete. So former athletes don't talk about injuries. You just go out there and play for the love of the game. Okay. You know what they always would say? Would you play if you didn't get paid? I would have played, and I still play. Saturday mornings, I play with my son, Chance, and all of his buddies. My game is totally different. I'm a slow, fat five man. And I set the meanest.
The feisty point guard becomes the slow, fat
I'm
five man.
I'm a slow, fat five man. And I set the most illegal screens, and they all know it. And I always say, well, you're going to call a legal screen on me, huh? Oh, yeah, you're a tough guy. Oh, yeah, you're 30 years younger, man. You're calling me for an illegal screen? But I hold, I cheat, and I do whatever it takes to win. And they all know that. That's a true story.
So, So every Saturday when you can, you still
every
play.
Every Saturday when I'm back home in California.
Yeah.
Every time. Even during the season, every game day, I play 2-on-2 for 30
really?
Minutes. Yep.
With coaches?
With three other coaches.
Okay. How does that work? Are you like playing against Obama there? Like you don't get to follow him?
I always tell the other two coaches, you guys are playing the Wizards. Unfortunately, you guys are the Generals. And we win a lot of the games.
I love it. Well, Scott, the minimum Brooks, I appreciate your time here. This will be the last one until next year.
When I can't wait.
And
by
the way,
highlight of my summer to spend 30 minutes with you.
The reason that we're out here, by the way, in the ambiance is your idea. You want to like take in.
What do you think?
I could do without it.
I think it was well worth it. Good decision by a former point guard.
Now turn fat center. Thanks, Scotty.
Thank you.